This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Welcome to our special live election night coverage, and welcome especially to our Facebook Live viewers. Please do share this live stream on your page and feel free to post comments and questions. Well, we're starting our coverage tonight with a very, very serious and very demoralizing outlook for Democrats, and in particular for the Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton, who, with the polls were showing at the beginning of the night, was likely to win by a strong margin, now is quite strongly behind. Donald Trump has had a very strong showing in several key states. It's just been announced that the key swing state of Ohio has voted to give the Republican nominee its Electoral College of votes. AP is calling Florida by a razor-thin margin as well, while the states of New Mexico and Colorado, and of course California, have been called for Clinton. Overall, there is a prediction that Donald Trump may be our new president. Well, the Senate is also in play still. The Republicans have won the House. That was predicted. But the Senate, there are several seats that Democrats won, including Tammy Duckworth in her Senate race in Illinois against Mark Kirk and several others. By the end of this hour, of course, we expect to have better results. Now, in the presidential race, one thing did become clear early on in the voting process, and that is that Latinos accepted the challenge presented by Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric and showed up in large numbers to vote, larger than in the last general election. Puerto Rican voters in Florida and Latino voters in Nevada in particular made their voices heard clearly enough to make some impact. We go now to Wisconsin to speak with Christine Newman-Ortiz. She is the executive director of the immigrants' rights organization, Voces de la Frontera. Welcome to the program, Christine.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, let's talk in general terms. It is 8 p.m. here on the West Coast as we begin this broadcast. And I don't think a lot of people thought that Trump would have such a strong showing. What do you make of the race so far?
I think we still have to get the final numbers. I know in the case of Milwaukee, we had a really big historic early vote turnout, and that is being counted right now, at least 50,000 votes. And in the Latino districts where we mobilized the vote, where the highest concentration of Latino voters in the state of Wisconsin are, we had a 300% increase over early voting in the previous presidential election. So I think it's still too early to call how that vote, the total vote will go, though we know that for Latino voters, they were very motivated in this election. It is a swing state where the Latino vote can have an impact because it's such a small margin of victory. 100,000 in the previous governor's race, 200,000 in the previous presidential race, and the Latino vote was, you know, 4 years ago, around 157,000 eligible voters. So we do have some preliminary reports from the wards that we are. It does not include the numbers from early voting. But we are seeing, in terms of the vote in the wards that we've been organizing in most deeply, the 50 wards where we knocked on 60,000 doors in Latino-dense districts, 81% supporting Clinton, 78% supporting Feingold. So at least like on the presidential, it was on par with the information we have right now with the 2012 elections.
Now, in terms of the showing in states like Nevada as well, where there was early voting by Latinos, this was seen as a big threat by the Trump campaign. In fact, in the hours leading up to the election, the Trump campaign sued or filed a lawsuit because polls for early voting stayed open for a few extra hours. A judge has thrown out that ruling. How important was it in Nevada for Latino voters to show up?
Well, I think we've seen efforts at voter suppression and here in Wisconsin, certainly, and across the state. And I think what happened in Nevada is another example of that. You know, the early voting, I think it definitely helps working people who are, like in the case of Latino voters, early voting is very important where you are working, two, three jobs, because we had a lawsuit against the restrictions that were placed by the Republican majority in the state legislature that restricted early voting, voter registration, required a new photo ID to limit the documentation you could show. So at least some parts of it were challenged, and it actually, of those voter suppression laws, and at least it did allow, in the case of Milwaukee and Madison, to offer early voting where, like in the case of Milwaukee, it's the largest minority concentration in the state. It's a majority minority city, large African-American, large Latino population to vote early and conveniently in their neighborhood. And so that's, and I think the urgency that people are feeling with the kinds of threats that threats and insults and the kind of violence that's been in a very real way provoked and the way it's tainted the culture is very real and a motivating force. But the organizing is also very, very important to because it's a community that does need information, such as information on the U.S. Senate race. A lot of new voters, what we know right now of what we're seeing just through early vote polling by Latino Decisions, and which is, concords with what we know is like about a quarter are new voters, so newly naturalized, or especially young people coming of age. We have very large numbers of children of immigrants coming of age. So
and then,
this is all...
Christine, just the day before the election, Ann Coulter, the conservative commentator, posted a tweet that some people summed up as, basically calling on white folks to vote. She said, if only people with at least four grandparents born in America were voting, Trump would win in a 50-state landslide. Essentially, she's just saying that that folks who are likely white, some pointed out that Donald Trump himself wouldn't have been eligible in that case because his grandparents were not born, all of them, in the United States. But is this the kind of intimidation and the kind of open insult that you're referring to?
Yeah, I mean, I think, we've had cases here where you have, the soccer games with some kids in some of the outlying areas of the state where one group of kids was chanting, Trump, Trump, and the other saying, get out, wetbacks. And ironically, a number of them were like Oneida, indigenous children, and U.S. citizen children. So just, you're seeing that kind of bullying culture extend to children. We have seen an incident of a hate crime here. Obviously, someone who's a man who shot a Hmong parents in front of his kids in the apartment complex where they lived. A man who, the same man then shot a Puerto Rican father in front of his son, tried to murder the son. And it was a hate crime. And so it just, I think this is the, we're definitely across the country and here seeing, which is what makes this not a typical election, that it's really appealing to the worst sentiments in people. Obviously, there's a lot of deep economic frustration across the board, but the Trump campaign is about really pitting people against each other while being very hypocritical about continuing to promote policies that are only going to benefit the very wealthy. And I think that's unfortunately... I think that's something that, however the election turns out, we have to go deeper in the kind of demands and the pressure that we put on our elected officials and engaging a broad multiracial movement against the kind of scapegoating that's going on. And
now,
to really
Christine,
or fight for the kind of changes we need.
Now, what is, when you have this kind of resurgence of open racism, there's a deep trauma that people feel. I mean, for Mexican and Mexican Americans, Latino Americans, people of immigrant origin, to be hearing from Donald Trump, he's going to build a wall with Mexico. A lot of people sort of fought back through cultural means. The Donald Trump piñata became became a very popular item this past election. The well-known Latino cartoonist Lalo Alcaraz has had a lot of commentary. Have those been important ways for people to express themselves in a space that feels like they're increasingly otherized?
Absolutely. I think humor is extremely important to combat the kind of also ludicrous politics that we're experiencing. It's really almost surreal. I mean, Trump's vocabulary is about 20 words. He says the same things over and over again. Yet it's touching a chord.
And in fact, President Obama made a very important point the other day during one of his campaign speeches for Hillary Clinton, saying that Trump has had his control over his Twitter account taken away from him by his campaign because he is so out of control. How can we trust somebody like that with the nuclear codes? How could we trust somebody like that with the issue of immigration? Of course, this is coming from Obama, the deporter in chief.
I mean, for us, in terms of humor, we had, it was really fun. We had when the Trump Latino, the one of the few Latino supporters out there said, you know, we should be voting for Trump because otherwise we'll see taco trucks on every corner.
That's right. He was actually the head of Latinos for Trump who said that.
That's right. And so we ended up doing a canvas where we had one of the local businesses who has taco trucks come and hand out tacos to all the canvassers and people. And so, you know, and that's just something that's continued to because obviously people love Mexican food and culture. and I think that's so I absolutely think we have to keep that as part of the movement against Trumpism, which is against, this kind of appeal to racism and to things, just some of the worst parts of people. And we haven't seen all the results yet. I know that what's motivated Latino voters deeply has been obviously the threats. I mean, something that's been very moving to me has when we've had some families come here to get registered, their children for the first time, you know, 18, 19. They're often coming with their parents, and you can just see the love between them. And it's a really beautiful thing. And so I think that, I'm very hopeful that we win this election. But, I think the conditions that have given rise to this are something that, it's really shaken a lot of people. It's certainly shaken me. I think it's shaken a lot of people. And we have to take it seriously, very, very seriously, and respond. In part, it's, the deep alienation and the deep dissatisfaction that is there because of the economic needs. Trump offers nothing to people, to working people, to address those needs. And I think
he offered a critique, right? Even if we disagreed with his critique, he was able to call Hillary Clinton out on her previous support for NAFTA and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, these free trade movements that have decimated American jobs. Because he was able to call her out, he was able to gain traction, particularly among poor white voters. Now, Sanders' presidency would have been able to stand up to that argument, had Bernie Sanders been the Democratic nominee. Of course, it's all wishful thinking. Christine, I want to just announce for our viewers that right now the New York Times is predicting a greater than 95% Trump presidency. A number of states have already been called. I'm not sure exactly how they're making these calculations. They have already called California in favor of Hillary Clinton, even though only 5% of precincts have begun reporting. Oregon has also been won by Hillary Clinton. However, the state of Florida looks likely to go to Trump. Nevada is now looking likely to go to Trump, but only 1% reporting. So certainly things could change over the course of the night, but things stand at a razor's edge when a lot of polls expected a landslide win. Currently, Clinton is being attributed 188 electoral college votes to Trump's 187. 270 is, of course, the magic number. And we do have this very bizarre method of electoral college votes that does skew the idea of democracy. So, Christine, let's finally turn to what you expect, particularly among young Latino organizers, voters, a newer generation going forward, regardless of who is president, because we know that a Democratic presidency has brought mass deportations, family detentions. A Trump presidency might bring another, likely bring another kind of fresh hell for immigrants and immigrant communities. How do you hope for Latino communities, for pro-immigrant communities, for advocates of immigrants to organize going forward after this election?
I think we've been very, very clear as part of a national network, the Fair Immigration Reform Movement, but I think across the board within even the broader networks within that it's really two very different scenarios. You know, I think at the end of the day that we always know that elections are not enough, and that under the Obama administration, you know, there was the expectation that we would pass immigration reform, at least the DREAM Act. And it was really the immigrant rights movement that stepped up and put the pressure that had averted a Ryan Romney self-deportation, let's deport them all presidency. But under the Obama administration, the immigrant rights movement had to fight very hard through civil rights demonstrations, through civil rights, civil disobedience, protests, marches, lobbying, all of that to deliver some of the change. And then obviously we know there was Republican obstructionism as well, but the change was DACA, deferred action, so temporary protected status for youth, parents, kind of a decriminalization around some of the enforcement parties, which are still in effect. I mean, that's the stuff that the Trump presidency promises to take away and actually escalate, which has represented years of struggle. So I think there's a very clear understanding that, you know, yeah, it would be very two different scenarios, but both require increased, call it militancy.
Vigilance, people really, organizing.
Pressure. And certainly under and under a Trump presidency, it would mean really doing something very similar to what was done here in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, earlier this year, we organized a statewide Day Without Latinos and Immigrants in response to an imminent law that was going to be signed it was a bill that was going to be signed into law that was an Arizona type law that would have turned really law enforcement to play an immigration enforcement role, promoted more racial profiling. And there was a statewide general strike that was both rural and cities all over, tens of thousands converged on the Capitol. There were business closures, there were walkouts, parents took their kids out of schools. And it defeated when there was no hope of any kind of political solution with a majority Republican in control of stopping that bill. And it was the economic pressure that killed that bill. Because, like, for instance, in the dairy industry, which is 60% immigrant, and it's the signature industry of Wisconsin, you had dairy workers who were walking off the job and ended up negotiating with dairy farmers.
So direct action, economic pressure, all of these sort of very important tools of organizing and activism, people need to start sharpening those tools regardless of who's in the White House. Christine, give out a website for Voces de la Frontera.
Voces de la Frontera is vdlf.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Christine, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Christine Newman Ortiz is the executive director of Voces de la Frontera. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/RU with Sonali.